Please be aware that this podcast has reference to drug and alcohol use and paraphernalia and may not be appropriate for some people in early recovery. Hello, everyone. My name is Dr. Mahjubeen Islam.
And I am Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And we want to thank you for listening to our Treat Addiction podcast. The information in this podcast cannot replace your seeking a treatment provider, which you can easily do at SAMHSA's national helpline at findtreatment.gov or 1-800-622-4357.
You are really excited about from the last episode about a magic mushroom and microdosing. So today we get a chance to talk about it.
Yeah, we will. And actually my interest in this started when I was listening to an NPR report, and it was so fascinating. So instead of talking about marijuana the monster, which was the natural thing after the opioids and the alcohol and the stimulants, I figured that we'd talk about microdosing since it's such the rage.
This is a new trend, and I assume you probably haven't had too many patients talk about it in sessions with you, although I have had a couple of people ask me about it and what I thought. What do you think?
That's true, and that's why it took me a longer time to put this together, because I had to do a good amount of a literature search to coherently present the situation. But interestingly, when I told a patient that we were talking about the podcast and he was appreciating it, and I said, you know, the next episode is going to be, and you can clearly see that I'm so fascinated with this, that it's going to be about magic mushrooms and microdosing. And he says that I was so amazed. He had so much information on it.
Wow.
So clearly this has been going on for a long time, but as such, I don't have any particular patient experiential stories.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Well, before we go into microdosing, maybe we should talk more generically about what hallucinogens are, and specifically target magic mushrooms.
So hallucinogens are psychedelic drugs that can potentially change the way people see, hear, taste, smell, or feel, and they also affect mood and thought.
You know, the typical one that comes to mind when you think about hallucinogen is LSD, isn't it?
Indeed. And that is why I was very intrigued when I listened to that report on microdosing and magic mushrooms, because of LSD.
So what exactly is or are magic mushrooms?
Magic mushrooms are a group of fungi that contain the active ingredient psilocybin, which is broken down to psilocin.
And they go back a long, long time ago with regards to their use, right?
Yeah, and that's what took me by surprise when I was researching this, that they are depicted in Stone Age rock art in Africa and Europe. And you can also see them in pre-Columbian sculptures seen throughout the Americas. Psilocybin mushrooms continue to be used in Mexican and Central American cultures in religion, spiritual, and divinatory contexts. And they occur on all continents, but the majority of the species are found in subtropical humid forests. And psilocybin semilanciata is considered the world's most widely distributed psilocybin mushroom. And it's found in temperate areas of Europe, North America, Asia, South America, Australia, and New Zealand. So the expanse is far.
So let's dig into this then. Chemically, what do they do? What do magic mushrooms do?
So they create, so psilocybin and psilocin create short-term increases in tolerance of users. So thus they make it, making it difficult to misuse them, because the more often they are taken within a short period, the weaker the resultant effects are. So they have not been known to cause a physical or psychological dependence or addiction. But if you remember from our categorization of DSM-5 in terms of addiction, one of the criteria is tolerance. So apparently, so there's this conflicting thing about addiction and with magic mushrooms, because if there is the development of tolerance, then we are going on our way towards addiction. But chemically, it's a serotonin agonist, and it has a high affinity for the 5-HT2A receptors. It's also, psilocybin is 200 times less potent than LSD and has a shorter duration of action. And maybe that's why it's so much more popular in terms of microdosing. And they're structurally related to, like I said, the neurotransmitter serotonin. And in their pure form, they are white crystalline powders, so as generic as they get. And while psilocybin is water-soluble, the psilocin is more soluble in lipids. So it can easily cross the blood-brain barrier where it exerts the psychedelic effect, which is similar to LSD.
So why do they gravitate toward magic mushrooms? What is the benefit to them?
So it's, age old, we've come across LSD before, and it's because of their psychedelic effects. And the psychedelic effects appear around 20 minutes after ingestion, and they can last up to 6 hours.
Wow. But how wide do you think the use of magic mushroom psilocybin microdosing is currently?
So this is what will really surprise you, because it really surprised me, that a report from the RAND Corporation estimates that about 3% of the American public, which is approximately 8 million adults, have used psilocybin in the past year, making it the most popular hallucinogen in 2023. The runner-up was MDMA or ecstasy at just over 1%, followed closely by LSD. And the RAND report was based on a nationally representative survey of about 4,000 people. And when people were asked why they use psilocybin, which is your question, the top three reasons that they gave were that it was fun, it was for fun and social enjoyment. And then it was followed by the reason was mental health, which is really a slippery slope. And then personal development and existential exploration, if that's a big mouthful.
I like that one, existential exploration. Like the opioid epidemic, it changed the profile of a drug user from being a bum under the bridge, and similar to cocaine, to now suburban professionals. It seems like microdosing has its own profile.
It sure does. And suburban moms, like there's a whole Facebook group that's created by a mom. So it's suburban moms and tech workers who seem to gravitate toward it. And apparently trying psychedelics at a microdose eases the stress of parenting, which, you know, all of us know is not a small thing. And it's become also a big party drug, a place that was reserved in the past for MDMA and LSD.
Physically, they can also have some significant effects, correct?
Yes, like all chemicals, they can cause nausea, vomiting, euphoria, muscle weakness, relaxation, drowsiness, and lack of coordination.
So let's go back now to the psychedelic effects for which they are mostly used for. What are some of those?
So they typically last from 3 to 8 hours. And a lot depends on the dosage, the preparation method, and personal metabolism. The first 3 to 4 hours after ingestion are typically referred to as the peak, in which the user experiences more vivid visuals and distortions in reality. Psilocybin also changes time perception, so the effects can seem to last a lot longer.
You know, whenever I think about hallucinogens and its effect on us, it always boggles my mind that people will dabble in things that will alter their reality and perceptions
Indeed.
Of reality.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
The feelings of being helpless and powerless. But the main sought-after effects are sensory, aren't they?
Indeed. And, you know, what we call the trip. So the sensory effects are visual and auditory hallucinations, which means that people see and hear things that are not there. It's followed by emotional changes and a changed perception of time and space. And there can be changes in the touch or tactile sensation as well. And colors feel enhanced, and one can experience strange light phenomena, such as auras or halos or a rippling or a shimmering effect. And sounds can have increased clarity. Music, for example, can take on a profound sense of cadence and depth. And this is the part that I really was very, like, fascinated with, that some users experience synesthesia, which means they visualize a color upon hearing a particular sound. Like, that's, like, quite something.
And I agree with you. That is quite something. That's very interesting. But again, I'm feeling this sense of helplessness and powerlessness. I'm thinking, but why? But why? So tell us more.
I was feeling kind of like really that way as well. It seems like if you start out with an anxious frame of mind, you're liable to have a bad trip.
Yeah.
But if you're around people you're comfortable with, you're liable to have a good experience.
I understand that the emotional piece of it depends on your starting frame of mind, whether you're in a comfortable place or you're with familiar people. But what do you think about the setting that a person has to be in order to experience a particular trip?
So the setting is, like I said, it's their frame of mind. But as far as the dose is concerned, where people have come up with this microdosing, is that the regular dose is 1 to 2.5 grams of the dried weight of the mushroom. But a microdose, which has become popular over the last few years, and which my patients seem to know a great deal about, is less than 0.1 to 0.5 grams of the dried weight of the mushroom.
And it is ingested, correct?
It is.
Okay. Now, is there a toxic dose? Can people overdose on magic mushrooms?
Apparently, they say it's very difficult to overdose on magic mushrooms. And this, I found this quite funny, because you would need to ingest 1.2 kilograms.
That's a lot.
Over 2.4 pounds of the psilocybin, which is the active ingredient. But the toxicity, though, comes mainly from how a high dose can cause the serotonin syndrome, which you're so familiar with.
I am very familiar with that, and it's a very scary proposition to have the serotonin syndrome. They can have symptoms from mild to severe and even fatal symptoms. There is the high blood pressure, your heart races, there's fever, there's tremors, sweating, diarrhea, and in some cases, your temperature may be elevated to at least 106, which is really significant. And complications can occur, which are seizures, muscle breakdown that can lead to kidney failure. There can also be a trip-induced psychosis, which is a very serious thing.
So the serotonin syndrome occurs with a high dose of psilocybin, but going back to the microdosing, which is the current rage, most of the information on microdosing is anecdotal or reported, and there are very few placebo-controlled double-blind studies, which is really the issue.
Yeah, and as mentioned, it's illegal. How do you do a double-blind control study with a product that you're not supposed to have? But what are anecdotal reports that people share with you or you've read about regarding microdosing?
So like, you know, the rage with cannabis and with previous and other drugs, this is the report that it really improves mood, cognitive function, concentration, and it enhances creativity and problem-solving skills. And some people microdose to self-medicate for cluster headaches, depression, and anxiety, among other conditions.
What does science say about this psilocybin microdosing, though? Are there any research?
So in the literature search that I did, both scientific and media search that I went through, science only acknowledges that microdosing is currently very common, fairly common, even among suburban moms that we talked about. But there are very few studies. One of them was a double-blind placebo-controlled study, but it only had 34 people. So, you know, right there is an issue because the study size is so small. And then it didn't really sort of validate the feeling that the microdosers get. And in fact, it said it had a negative result for microdosing. But there was another study, which was an observational one with 953 psilocybin microdosers compared to 180 non-dosing participants for 30 days. And that one did find improvements in mood and mental health and confirmed the anecdotal reports of people who swear by the benefits of microdosing. And just like the NPR report and the latest, there's a report in JAMA about this. But the conclusion of that is the typical one, which you want to, you know, kill yourself for, is more research is needed.
More research needs to be done. There is this thing called expectancy effect.
Yes. And, you know, this reminded me, the expectancy effect reminded me of like when you go to a movie and someone tells you that, oh, my God, it's awesome. And you go there and it's like, what? So the expectancy effect means that most people who take a daily pill that they fervently expect will help them feel happier and smarter will feel like they are happier and smarter just from taking the pill, regardless of what's in it. And I guess to some degree, it would be like the placebo effect that we have in medicine.
You know, and I can see how that is a thing. But I have some people that I recommend, you know, healthy eating and exercising, and I tell them, I promise you, in a few weeks, if you really try this, you will feel better. And some of them will come back and say, no, I didn't, because they were not expecting that they would feel better. But those who are with that mindset of expectancy,
right,
they do appreciate it. So what is the recommendation regarding psilocybin microdosing?
Because, like, as you said, it is illegal and not regulated, it is difficult to tell what concentration one is getting. And we are seeing that a lot in fentanyl, in the opioid crisis, in which it's more and more concentrated. So obviously it's not a standardized dose. And then there's the issue of tolerance, meaning you need to keep increasing the dose to get the same effect. But if it is not standardized, how do you know to increase the dose? Mm-hmm. So while it's been used for centuries by indigenous peoples, a too large a dose can be a terrifying and traumatic experience, because at that point, you're not microdosing. You're taking, you know, a full trip. And people with major mental illnesses like bipolar disorder and schizophrenia should really be careful with the use of psilocybin, because it can cause or exacerbate psychosis.
You know, this triggered a thought for me regarding those individuals who are referred to a dispensary for cannabis. What do we tell them? How much should you use? What's the concentration? Who's a manufacturer? There's so many intangibles. But the bottom line appears to be that the people who want to experiment with these should consult with their physicians and decide if it's the right thing for them to do. Remembering that psilocybin is not regulated, and you can get yourself into legal problems and also accidentally poison yourself, which would not be a good thing. And there is no definite proof that microdosing helps. Mostly it is anecdotal.
It is entirely. And so what's going on with psychedelics is also reminding me a lot. It's so reminiscent of what happened with cannabis.
Yeah, I was just sharing that earlier. Also, the government did not get involved with the legalization of cannabis until the cannabis lobby imposed itself on legislators, and the government then was basically passive in their response. It remains to be seen whether the same route will be adopted for psilocybin and other psychedelics. There's a lot of information just flooding the internet right now about this.
Right. And governmental agencies somehow or the other are always on the tail end of a big phenomenon. And we kind of like the government and science tends to wake up a little bit later. And, you know, people have already tried it.
But I'm also guilty, because often I have patients come to me after this has been out forever asking my opinion. And I'm thinking, oh, wait, give me a minute. Let me do some research. And then get
exactly.
Back with you.
Exactly. So, yeah, so we are a little bit behind.
Yeah.
And we always talk about how, you know, addicted patients are so much more. They know so much more. They're so much, they're very conversant with what has been going on.
Avant-garde.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Right. So we really hope you enjoyed this episode. Our next episode will deal with the marijuana monster. And we do hope you will join us. I'm your host and producer, Dr. Majuddin Islam.
And I'm your co-host, Dr. Ketley Daniels.
And our executive producer is the very talented Chris Pfeiffer. Do share this podcast with friends and family, for it is only through education that our society can be helped and we can stem the destruction that drug use causes. Just go to wgte.org/treataddiction or wherever you stream your podcasts. And with all the challenges of life, do remember, patience in difficult times and gratitude always. See you soon.
WGTE. Voices around us.
WGTE is supported in part by the American Rescue Plan Act funds, allocated by the City of Toledo and the Lucas County Commissioners, and administered by the Arts Commission.